From the Watson Institute for International and Public Affairs at Brown University, this is Trending Globally. I'm Dan Richards. We've got a lot of exciting new episodes coming up in the next few weeks and months, but this week we're sharing an episode of another podcast from the Watson Institute. It's called Mark and Carrie. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the show is hosted by political economist Mark Blythe and political scientist Carrie Nordland. And each episode, they discuss, debate, add context to, and occasionally make fun of the news. The conversations are always thought-provoking and informative. And while the topics are often pretty heavy, the show is not. On this episode, they get into the geopolitics of the World Cup, the future of the Republican Party, and how FTX's crypto scandal fits into a longer lineage of financial fraud. And those are just a few of the topics. For scheduling reasons, we actually ended up recording this episode in Mark's basement, as you'll hear, which is not as weird as it sounds, because Mark is also a musician and his basement has wonderful acoustics and audio recording equipment. It also, at the time of recording, had a dog in it, who you will briefly meet. They started with, what else, the World Cup. So without further ado, here are Mark and Carrie.
Well, hello and welcome to Mark and Carrie. We're back in your basement, which is like the second time we're here.
Exactly.
I think I know the answer to this, but are you boycotting watching the World Cup or are you watching? What's your, where are you on this?
So I did an interview with a student newspaper about this and found myself getting to a pretty interesting place in the conversation, which was the best way to boycott this thing is to watch it.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
Which is what you're watching is an example of sports washing. Right. Uh-huh. So you've heard of greenwashing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So
yeah.
It's sports washing. Yeah. Right. And the best thing you can do rather than like, I'm above this and I'll ignore it. Right. Because it will continue regardless is to watch it. And if it's truly ridiculous and if it's AstroTurf fans and if it's just nonsense, then in a sense, you're part of showing it up.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately for that thesis, it seems that it's actually quite a well-run World Cup with genuine fans from around the world that seem to be enjoying themselves. So yes, it does put the moral thing sort of, you know, into question in a new way. So in other words, yes, I'm watching it. There you go.
I am an American fan with typical American preferences in that nothing ever seems to happen in soccer. And so I'll watch it, but I feel like nothing happens. And then when it does, like that's the only thing that happens for a long time.
Yes, sometimes it can be like that. It's kind of a tragedy that the most watched game was the USA-England game, which was the worst game of soccer that I've seen in about 10 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but anyway, let's move on from that. There. Let's think about the other stuff that's going on.
Real stake in
There's
that
no
one.
Beer in the stadiums, which is a fun one.
Well, they did that at the last second, too. The brother of the emir said he didn't like the Budweiser tents.
Yes, exactly.
And was like, no more.
I mean, I'm with him on that one because I don't actually think Budweiser is actually beer.
Well,
so, you know, it's banning Bud and I'm all in favor of that one.
Yeah.
There was the whole thing of you got an instant yellow card if you wore LGBTQ rights armbands.
Yes.
Which was pretty heavy tactics.
But what are your thoughts about this in terms of... this gets into a whole nother thing about, you know, sports and the politicization of sport. But there is no, for all the human rights abuses, there is no, what's the punishment for Qatar? I mean.
Well, none. Yeah, totally.
The world is there. It seems well run. People, the fans seem excited.
Well, there's an interesting one as well. I mean, we tend to think about human rights abuses, someone is taken to prison and tortured, right?
Yeah.
That's not what's happening. What the human rights abuses are, loads and loads of voluntary migrant workers from poor countries working in appalling labor conditions and being seriously injured, maimed, or being killed, right? So are those rights abuses or are it just terrible labor practices, right? There's a lot of things getting thrown into the blender on this one. In terms of, you know, what Qatar gets out of this, you got to think of that whole region. Think of Manchester City, the biggest club in England, right? They're owned by the mob out of Abu Dhabi, the neighbors, right? All of the airlines, Qatar, Etihad, Emirates, right? They're all sponsors of like big football teams.
Right.
Qatar has at various points owned, I think, or had done sponsorship deals, I should say, with Barcelona, Bayern Munich, Roma. They recently bought PSG, Paris Saint-Germain.
Oh, geez,
so this is all part of a sort of giant, if you will, sports wash image branding, mm-hmm. honestly, with a nice authoritarian's look, we buy football. Now, why would you do this? Partly it's ingratiating yourself to the Western states that buy your oil and are your security mm-hmm. guarantors. But there's also a lot of stuff which goes on, you know, under the radar that's very similar at home. If you yes. think about, you know, elite universities opening up campuses in Doha
sure.
and all this sort of stuff. If you think about elite American medical institutions having separate wings from people for
that's
the
true.
Gulf and
yeah.
building ancillary clinics over there.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're standing over here throwing our righteousness stones at them.
Yeah.
But, you know, we do the same sort of stuff. We are total enablers of this whole thing.
Yeah. So Qatar is not the only country to import laborers. Of course, the United States has a long history with this as well, and of course, lots of other Western nations too. But I didn't realize that the laborers often, I don't know in how many cases, their passports were taken away and they were not allowed to leave. So
right, and that's the rights violation.
Yeah.
But that's incredibly common. Right. Not just in the Gulf. I mean, you know, stories of like Filipinos who leave the Philippines and become domestic servants in India and places in South Asia, like the removal of the passport to keep you there. And then, you know, this sort of stuff. That's common. That even happens, you know, with certain elite families in England. There's been court cases over this. So that's kind of a general sort of thing.
So it's interesting to think about the elevation of the of these particular royal rich families from the Middle East, like buying their way into certain circles that allows them to then be accepted, you know, outside of the terrible human rights abuses.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it is, you know, as they say, sports washing. In case anyone's listening and hearing the background growling and something squeaking, that's the golden retriever saying, can you pay attention to me, please? Because I'm a cute golden retriever. But we will keep this in the episode. And Lucy, calm down.
It makes it so much more friendly and less serious.
Exactly. All right, so let's switch it. You must have been super excited. Finally, after months and months of talking about it, the midterms are here. And it was amazing, right? Everything changed.
Deep breath. I have, you know, how long is this episode going to be? I think my big takeaways, I have three takeaways for the midterms. And one is that polling is dead. And we've talked about that. Like the Republicans flooded the last couple of weeks with all these garbage polls. But polling essentially didn't really tell us anything, which is what led to, or which should have been, many people thought it was going to be a red wave, but then was red trickle, red drizzle. So polling is dead. These are not particularly novel thoughts, but we are very, very close.
But the polling thing is interesting, right? Because isn't it meant to be sort of, you know, they called it in Britain the silent Tories, right? And it's the silent Republicans. So the whole thing was you were underestimating the Republican vote.
Yeah.
So the reason they thought there was going to be a wave is because they already had a majority, right?
Yeah.
So it wasn't just that, like, they got it wrong. Like, they got the sign wrong. I mean, it was basically the other way around, right?
Yeah.
So polling's really in trouble, right?
Oh, I think so. I mean, just the entire basis of how do you get a random sample these days, I think, is incredibly hard. And the amount of money that has to be spent in order to actually get that. And then to just be able to, like in everything, to be able to tell the good poll from the bad poll. And how do we actually know the difference between that and junk science, the junk statistical science versus the stuff that actually can stand up. And I think the other thing that was interesting is that we're very closely divided. Power flips as quickly as it does from every 2 years or so. Is I think one thing that adds to this, like the U.S. can't get anything done because the power is switching back and forth all the time. Yeah.
Years and years ago, it's kind of funny that when I reflect on it. Back in 1994, there's a political scientist and an economist did a book together, and it was this whole theory of rational ticket splitting. Right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So this idea that basically, you know, the publics are, like, have rational expectations and are long-sighted and have all this information, which is complete nonsense. And that somehow what they were doing was basically making sure there was divided government because they liked that, because that then gave them stability and all the rest of it. And what a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
I mean, people don't know anything, right? It's just, we know now with the spread of social media, it's just chaos out there, chaos and conspiracy theories.
Yep.
And it's just partisan throwing red meat or blue meat to the base and hope for the best.
Yeah.
With maybe one or two wedge issues that kind of like get you a little something. Like if you're in Alaska, but you're okay with fish, you can win if you're a Democrat, right? If you're Joe Manchin, right, you can be absolutely conservative, but you can support the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
So long as you're, you know, doing the other stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting on that. I mean, people showed up in Georgia and they voted for Brian Kemp for governor, the Republican, but then voted for Warnock, the Democratic senator. And this happened in Pennsylvania as well, that they voted for, they would vote for the state ledge person. They'd vote for John Fetterman, the Democrat. So, I mean, you actually saw moments of ticket splitting, which people, political scientists, didn't think happened anymore.
Right. That's a good, exactly.
And just straight ticket
voters. It was true when they wrote about it, then it stopped to being true.
Yeah.
And then like it seems as if it's come back to a certain extent, at least in some places.
Yeah. They're still counting votes in two House districts. So the House has not been fully decided. Yes.
I mean, who sent the votes around? The British Post Office? I mean.
Yeah. California and then Colorado 3, which is Lauren Boebert. She's known as Mega Barbie. So these votes are still being counted. But as it stands right now, it's, I think, 220 something to 218. But the Republicans are expected to pick up those two seats. So in the end, it'll be plus Republicans 10 seats, I think, in the House. They were predicting something like 60. So it's still a pretty narrow margin for them.
So should the Democrats be confident going forward? Let's assume the following, right? China doesn't invade Taiwan.
Okay.
Russia doesn't go nuclear. And we're all still here. Inflation abates. The economy gets better.
Yeah.
Are they actually in a reelectable position?
So is Trump on the ballot? I think that's what is really the question for the presidential.
So let's turn to it. He's back. He's officially back, right?
He's back, yeah.
But he was invited back on Twitter. He hasn't gone back.
No. And right? I'm curious, do you think, Billy, I've been reading, he has a contract, which I don't know if he's ever paid attention to any contract, but a contract with Truth Social.
Truth Social.
So this is maybe why he's not back on Twitter.
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure he could unwrite that contract if he wanted
to. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
But then there's the whole sort of like, maybe it's just liberal reporting bias, but it seems the Republicans aren't that thrilled. In part because of the effect that he had in the midterms, right?
Well, and it's so interesting. Murdoch, the New York Post is what he owns, right?
Oh, no, he owns everything. Yeah. Come on, yeah.
Well, that's true. The first two covers right after the midterm were the future, big picture of Ron DeSantis, and then Trumpity Dumpity.
Oh,
So you could tell that the Murdochs are like, we're done with you.
We're done with you, exactly. Which actually tells you where real power lies.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it is not with your electable representatives. It is with who your media barons want to give them a tax break for the next several years.
Yes, yes. But is he on the ballot? And of course, however many days after the midterm, he said, yes, he's going to be. But I mean, he's also done even for him, some pretty nutty stuff.
I mean, the white supremacist and Ye dinner, it's hard to know which one is which in that statement.
Yeah.
I know you can't make it up.
No, you really
can't make it up. So anyway, he's back. It seems to be less of the tsunami and red storm than people had thought. The Democrats still seem to be alive. The world continues to surprise.
And just one last thing about Trump. So his endorsements were mixed. He had, I think, 10. If you think of the actual endorsements, it's hard to measure this stuff because sometimes he said yes and then he'd pull it back. But he had 10 victories, 10 defeats. Some big defeats like Dr. Oz, for example, in Pennsylvania.
But in seriousness, he was a total muppet.
Dr. Oz.
He was ridiculous.
Oh, I mean, yeah, yes. So I don't know that necessarily gives us any real evidence as to, you know, how much, whether Trump has the juice to stay for another 2 years. But I mean, he's still front page of news. I mean, he's the best thing Democrats have going for him, too.
That's
especially
true.
If Biden, who just had his 80th birthday, runs. I mean, you know.
I know. And the whole thing is, of course, with Biden, that, you know, he will run if Trump runs because, you know, if Trump has the only I can fix it complex, then Biden has the only I can defeat Trump complex.
Yep.
And it's bad enough with two septuagenarians at it. A near octogenarian and an actual octogenarian.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I know.
Really, we need to move on. We really do.
Yeah. I mean, it almost makes you want Ron DeSantis to win.
Somebody who's actually not seen MASH when it was originally syndicated.
True. Yes.
Right? That would be good. All right. Where else do we want to go? China.
Well,
as Trump would say, China.
The protests there, I mean, if we can call them protests, are interesting because you wonder how long Xi is going to allow these to happen before is he just letting them have their moment? Or presumably he's going to have the secret police shut this stuff down pretty quickly.
Well, remember, this is a guy who in the space of 3 years built the equivalent of the prison, the American prison industrial complex, and put an entire ethnic group into it who number in the millions.
Yeah.
So, you know, the notion that he's not, he's going to be a little bit afraid of a couple of protests in town.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So, I mean, interesting stuff there. Apparently, it was exacerbated by Chinese football fans actually watching the World Cup and seeing all these people who didn't have masks.
Yeah.
And then it was the apartment fire and then basically the frustrations and it just kicked off.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole sort of, you know, we're going to go for zero COVID. You know, it sounds good, but if you actually say to people, here's what we're going to do. We're never going to stop having lockdowns.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's where it gets kind of like, what? Why are we actually doing this?
Yeah.
And rather than sort of signaling the competence of the Communist Party, which is what they always Trump, you know, it is, in the other sense of Trump, it is this, you know, just sort of like, you people have no idea what you're doing. You blew the vaccine.
Yeah.
You came out with Sinovac. It doesn't work very well. Mm-hmm. You won't ask the West for like their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got this situation where you're just constantly locking down entire cities. What, you know what? It's not really working.
Well, and your citizens are not, they're actually humans and don't want to be locked up anymore. So much so that they're risking their lives to protest. I have a sidebar question for you. So China has a huge population. India has a huge, but neither of them are in the World Cup. Do they not? I mean, they can build gigantic cities, but they can't.
So it's interesting. I think Modi was also a bit of a soccer fan, but I know that Xi definitely was.
Yeah.
And China has a sort of like Chinese Super League. And for a few years before the pandemic, they were offering big salaries to Western players. They were really trying to build this up. But I don't know if it's kind of fallen by the wayside, the COVID restrictions have done it and whatever, but it just hasn't happened for either. I mean, for India, you know, the big, one of the big sports, of course, is cricket.
Yeah,
You know, coming out of that kind of post-colonial legacy, if you want to put it. Sports in China, I mean, there's huge following for British sports team. Manchester United have enormous fan base in China, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
The TV rights in China are incredibly lucrative.
Wow.
So it's really popular.
Yeah.
And there is a domestic league, but maybe it's just a bit like the Americans. I mean, it just took them 20 years to get it together and actually be good.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. Maybe it just takes that bit of time. One thing we should mention, though, and we actually got an email about this.
Yeah.
We do read your emails from a friend in Iran, who basically said, why are you guys not even mentioning the fact that we've got, you know, more serious protests? And I think we do need to acknowledge this because it's one of those things that the West loves to highlight because it doesn't like Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it points at, you know, the heroicness. Well, first of all, the situation that's coming from basically killing like women,
or,
you know, teenage women, right?
Yeah. Yep.
By the security apparatus.
Yeah.
And then the protests against this. And, you know, you see the way that this bubbled into the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the Iranian team basically doing their team photograph with everybody covering their mouth, right?
Yeah, yeah.
As if to say we're all being silenced, right? And, you know, this is a regime that doesn't screw around, right? Once they decide you need to go, they will kill you, right?
Yeah.
It's not like China will throw you in jail for a few years, right? They will actually kill you.
Yeah.
So I actually thought it was incredibly impressive that the Iranian team would even make a gesture that. I mean, that was incredibly brave.
Yeah.
I just wanted to acknowledge that.
No, but I agree with you because even with all the, I'm going to wear the armband for LGBTQ, right? And then they didn't. And the Iranians who, the penalty is death. They were the bravest, to my mind.
No, absolutely.
To actually stand up. I also, there are all sorts of different numbers in terms of how many people have been killed in terms of the protests. But, I mean, there was also a report, I think, early in September that the Ayatollah, who's in his actually similar age to Joe Biden, is actually quite...
Thank you, 80-year-olds. Yes,
was quite ill. So I don't know. I mean, just knowing Iranian politics from very far away distance, I mean, does this signal some like a change in leadership? I mean, or is this just one of those things that the West is really, you know, look at these protests, somewhere else in China, in Iran, and, you know, maybe we look somewhat better in comparison.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, at various points, we think our own regimes are unpopular.
Yeah.
Look no further than Liz Truss.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you can say a lot of things about Liz Truss. But she wasn't basically out to murder her own citizens en masse.
Yeah.
And you really are dealing with an entirely different type of regime where it's deeply distrusted, if not hated, by large segments of its own population.
Yeah.
And they know that and they will fight back.
Yep.
Because they know that if they're ever like vulnerable and replaced, then there's going to be payback for all the stuff that they've done.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't screw around. Okay, are we going to talk about FTX?
Go on.
I've been waiting to hear I'm so curious what your take on this is.
Well, I mean, we've spoken crypto before.
Yes.
And I've been, shall we put, a bit of a skeptic, right? This one's actually much more interesting as traditional. What happens when traditional banking meets crypto, or crypto tries to do traditional banking, right? So how do you make money off of a worthless token that's only got value because other people think it has value?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to have a place you can buy and sell different tokens, and you can actually make prices, right?
Yeah.
So you have this thing called an exchange, right? Now, why would you put your coins in the exchange rather than like keep them on your computer and trade them yourself? Well, because of ease, liquidity, options, you can do things. Okay, that's making sense. I'm willing to pay you fees. But to really make it worthwhile, the exchange has basically said, if you give us your tokens, we'll do investments in other tokens and we'll guarantee you a pretty high rate of return for doing so.
And this is what FTX is saying.
Yes.
Sam Bankman-Fried,
all these exchanges, okay. Basically. They're not just exchanges that charge you a fee because it's convenient for you to buy and sell stuff. They're actually giving you a quote-unquote value proposition, which is I'll give you X percent on, you know, a return if you give us your coins. Now, for that to happen, they have to go off and make really risky investments.
Okay.
And so long as they pay off, everything works. But now you've got the classic Ponzi, right? So long as the money's flowing in, it's all good. The minute the money drops, it's bad.
Yeah.
And what happened was, it seems that basically to cover up the losses that they were making, he gave the hedge fund that he runs, it's called Alameda Research, loads of people's coins to then sort of gamble on resurrection for the losses they'd already made.
Okay.
And of course, the whole thing just went down. This is a classic story. This is like AIG in the financial crisis, being over-levered on insurance contracts and then basically banks, what they call gambling on resurrection, the all or nothing bet to bring it back, right? So it's kind of funny that to me, what I think is really interesting is, despite the fact that it's all DeFi and it's all about crypto and it's all these exchanges and it's so new and all that, it's actually a really old story.
Yeah.
There's nothing really that new in it. You got massively over-levered.
Yeah.
You took a series of bets. You gambled on resurrection and down you went. That's an incredibly old story.
So I gave you my money and then I wanted it back because I got nervous and there was no money to
There was
get
no
it.
Money because I'd borrowed it from you on the prior that I'm going to give you money back for doing so. I'm going to pay you an interest charge, essentially, right? But what's actually happened is it's not really there because I took it all and gambled it away on something else.
Right.
And then I got found out.
Right. And because there's like crypto bros, they're like, no regulation, you can't regulate us.
Right. So there's at least when AIG went down, there was the insurance regulator of Pennsylvania who was backed up by the US government, right? So you could do something about that.
Yeah.
In this case, no. And you know, to a certain extent, there's a certain poetic justice about this, right? So if one of your main claims is like, you know, no government, no regulation, it's the real value, blah, blah, blah. Well, yeah, that's what happens when it turns out, you know, you've invested in crap. Nobody comes to help you.
Will he? Okay, so here's where I'm going. So Elizabeth Holmes was just
there's a news point, right?
For 11 years. Or
I wonder how she's enjoying Club Fed.
Yes.
I wonder where they sent her.
The WeWork guy, Adam,
he
didn't go to jail.
No, because he didn't actually do any fraud.
Well, Sam, I mean, what I thought was so interesting is, first of all, he wears these gigantic teeth, he's like this wonder kid or kind or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And he's like, everyone's like, MIT, his parents are Stanford law professor. And there's this weird like, oh, well, therefore, it must be okay.
And it's the Elizabeth Holmes thing. So, I mean, you're totally right, right? She's Stanford. She wears a polo neck. She looks like a female Steve Jobs. She's kind of cute. She must be a genius.
But here's my question is, does Elizabeth Holmes get taken, or does she get sentenced to 11 years? Will Sam Bankman-Fried, will he suffer any penalties?
That's a fascinating one, right? So somebody I had on the other podcast I did a while ago is a guy called Dan Davies, who wrote a book called Lying for Money.
Okay.
Right. So if you haven't listened to it, listen to it. It's great because he's an authority on this. He used to work for the Bank of England.
Okay.
And it's basically about financial fraud. And the difference between financial fraud and fraud in any other sphere is fraud in any other sphere tends to be based upon a lie.
Okay.
And if you can show the lie, then you've committed fraud, right?
Okay.
But maybe it just didn't work out. Now, you can't do that with Theranos technology because there was no technology.
Right.
You just go, this doesn't work, right?
Right.
But she
said it did.
Right.
Okay,
boom.
So there's the fraud.
And then she consistently said it did when it was clear that it didn't, right?
Okay.
That's a fraud. Now, Dan's point is that pretty much anyone in any business, like you don't have to be doing a crypto bro thing. You could be running a bakery, right? It's really hard to tell the difference between bad luck, mismanagement, and a fraud.
I see.
The very first time it happens. If you've got a track record, you run three bakeries, they all go bust, people get suspicious, right?
Yeah.
But if I did one and I bought too many chairs and I opened at the wrong time and it just ended up sort of all falling apart and I couldn't do it and I default on the loans and I go into bankruptcy, maybe I took all the loans and stuck them in a bank account somewhere.
Yeah.
And I just ran this train into the ground. You're now going to have to go after me to find out. And that's really difficult because there's no obvious lie.
Right. So WeWork is like, oh, I tried.
Yeah. WeWork was just sort of like a really bad idea backed by a Japanese bank that should have known better.
Right.
And to get the guy who was a megalomaniac out of the way, they paid him $1 billion.
Right.
So he got rewarded for basically running a company into the ground.
Right.
That's slightly different from what we're talking about here.
Right. Okay.
And with finance, it's much more opaque. Even normal finance, not just you don't even need all the layers of crypto babble.
Right.
It's just much more opaque and hard to find out.
Right. Okay. Because I see a gendered things too. And like the Adam Newman even actually gets more money and people are like, the next thing you want to do, we're on board for that. But I get your point that there's an actual thing to point with her and
that's
like, no, that just,
that makes a difference.
Yeah.
So that was FTX. Where do we want to go next? Are we still raising interest rates? I don't think so. I think it's pretty much done. It's baked on at this point.
Oh,
short answer. If you keep doing this, all the money in the rest of the world is going to run to the United States and you'll have the mother of all currency crisis. They don't want that to happen. It looks like one of the perverse effects of China locking everything down is they're not using much gas.
Oh, okay.
Which means that all the LNG cargoes that are going to Asia are now able to go to Europe. Europe's gas storage for Germany is now above where it normally is in the winter, despite the Germans. Oil prices have fallen or continue to fall. So if it is the case that most of this is supply side driven and there isn't a kind of unhinging of expectations that we've spoken about before, then it's not going to be like return to zero inflation. There's still lots of things that could go wrong. Again, more China lockdowns mean more supply chain problems, whatever.
Yeah.
But the rationale for continuing to hike up and up and up, that's getting weaker.
Yeah.
And there's also an awareness now, even at the IMF. I think it was the IMF did a piece that said the problem is if everybody tightens, there's a kind of fallacy of composition problem. So while it makes sense for any one country to tighten, particularly if somebody else tightens, if they all tighten at once, the sum of tightening is more than any one of them would have wanted done.
Yeah.
Right? So, in a sense, you can bind it too much.
Okay.
So, so I think it's like we're pushing back on the gas pedal a little bit.
Well, I mean, I guess that will make maybe the holidays somewhat less bleak.
Yeah,
in terms of spending, consumer spending then.
One would certainly hope so.
Do you, just to back to crypto for a second, because I saw something, there's another crypto that has folded, but of course now I can't remember the name of it.
Yeah, there's Binance is one of the exchanges. That one's still okay.
Yeah.
Then there's another one that's basically in bankruptcy. Well, and again, this is the same as the financial crisis of 2008, right? What have AIG and Goldman Sachs and Chase Manhattan and the firms that went down like Countrywide Mortgage all gone common.
Oh, yeah.
They're all connected to each other.
Yeah.
So if one of them's wildly levered, the problem, and that hits them, it's going to hit the other one because they're the counterparty. They're probably just as wildly levered. They're going to go down as well.
Right. Okay. So it's not, I get your point, the connection versus like it's some like bigger trend that like crypto's dead or something like that.
Yeah. It's just, it's classic banking. They're just massively over levered and undercapitalized and they blew themselves up.
I just think your point that like it's such an old story. I mean,
it's such an old story.
Just written it. Yeah.
I mean, you read this stuff and it's like, no, don't worry because with the hash protocol of blah, blah, blah. And it's all this programmer language. At the end of the day, it's like you basically borrowed short, levered, and you lost the money.
Yeah.
That's it. There's nothing more complex than that.
Yeah.
What's some fun stuff?
Because
we're going into the holidays now.
I don't know if you saw this, but Taylor Swift had a like 50-something concerts at big arenas that she was selling. Of course, everything was through Ticketmaster. They were doing, I hope I'm getting all these details right. They were doing like a pre-sale, except the pre-sale went bad. And so everything got flooded. Ticketmaster, of course, like couldn't
crash the servers.
Right? Like a billion people couldn't get their tickets, but some did. And so what was an interesting fallout from this was that Taylor Swift then called for, an investigation into this. And, a lot of the sort of like snide comments were, is Taylor Swift doing the job of the DOJ in terms of like breaking up a monopoly?
And yes, she is.
Yes.
God bless her. Right?
Yes.
Because, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just the sort of license monopoly. I mean, I just hate Ticketmaster.
I know.
I mean, every time you want to go get a ticket, you know, it's like, yeah, the ticket costs 36, but you're going to end up paying 60.
Yes.
It's like, come on, what is this? This is absurd.
All the fees and all the, all that sort of stuff.
And, you know, the fees. I mean, think about, oh, the terrible fees because of all the services they're doing. I get a monopoly right to issue a digital token that has a marginal cost of zero to produce.
Yeah.
So I do nothing except act as an exchange, and I get to double the price.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely outrageous.
Yeah. On the Royals for a second, you know, Meghan and Harry's docu-series, is coming out like a month ahead of his...
Ahead of the book, of the tell-all book.
Yes, which obviously we'll do a book club about that.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
But I think that was all the royal news. I think we'll be able to get in an end of the year episode, and we can talk about like our favorite end of year stuff.
We should go back and
yes,
and look
of course.
What we should do is go back. I mean, not that we have time to do this, but we should go back and listen to all the episodes, and then just note all the times we were wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
So if anybody who's out there wants to do this for us, go back, listen to all the episodes, and just everything we got wrong, just write down one line. You know, you said this, you got this wrong, right? Yeah. And send it to me or Kari,
that would be great.
Right?
Yes, please.
And then we'll totally ignore you. Yeah. No, then we'll actually use that as the basis for an episode. That'd be great.
Since we started the World Cup, let's end with that. Do you have any favorite highlights, lowlights, etc.?
To a certain extent, 2 days ago, my riff on this was that this is the decline of the West.
Oh, okay.
Right, because it was just, you know, anything interesting was happening with, like, Germany was crap, England was crap, you know, all the usual sort of suspects, right? And Brazil was awesome, right? Yeah. Really awesome. Argentina was crap, you know. and then there was one game which came along, which was Serbia versus Ghana, I think it was. It was 3-3.
Yeah.
And it was everything that football should be.
Yeah.
It was just a brilliant game. Yeah. Utterly chaotic, end to end, everybody giving everything.
Yeah.
And just like nail biting. The other one I thought I was so sad was the, interestingly, they don't call them South Korea, they call them the Republic of Korea.
Yeah.
In all the commentary.
Yep.
Was the Korean game when they went down 3-2 because, you know, they were weak in the first half, but the second half, they just tried so hard. They had so many chances, and you could just know it just wasn't going to happen for them. And in a sense, that's football at its best.
You know, I have to say, again, you know, I already set this up that I don't watch a lot of soccer, is that this is the one event, even not even the Olympics, where everybody, I walked into class and they had arrived early and had it on the big screen, and it's live TV, which no one watches anymore.
Right.
We didn't know the outcome yet. Everybody was watching the same thing. Mm-hmm. And that's just cool because it happens very rarely.
Because you're absolutely right. Because what we've done is we've individuated the screen.
Yeah.
And everybody's watching a different thing at a different time. Yep. And there's no sort of like community or sense of that. And this is exactly what this creates, right? Yeah. You know, let's not romanticize it. Let's go back to where we started, right? Yeah. It's sports washing authoritarian regimes, at least in this instance.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be, right? But it is based upon something exactly as you say, which is both communal and shared and unknown.
Yeah.
There's excitement.
Yes.
Unless it's the USA versus England.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having us in your basement.
That's always a pleasure.
Thanks to Mark and Carrie for sharing their conversation with us on Trending Globally. We'll put a link to their show in the show notes, and you can also, of course, subscribe by searching for Mark and Carrie wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode was produced by me, Dan Richards, Sam McKeever-Holtzman, and Layla Wirth. Our theme music is by Henry Bloomfield. Additional music by the Blue Dot Sessions. If you like the show, leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It really helps others to find us. And even better, recommend the show to a friend who you think might like it. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for guests or topics, send us an email at trendingglobally@brown.edu. Again, that's all one word, trendingglobally@brown.edu. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of Trending Globally. Thanks.